One time, my husband and I were fighting over a pot that he had left out to fester for 8 days and counting. It was one of two pots we owned. I cooked 3 meals a day. Eventually, he threw the pot away and proclaimed that if I took it out of the trash, our relationship was over. I took it out of the trash immediately. He told me I chose a pot over him and that I was a bitch. I tried to move past him away from the fight, and he pushed me into a wall. Hi, I'm Zahn Valines, and this is the Liberating Motherhood Podcast.
And my name is Jeff, and I am here in support of the Liberating Motherhood Podcast.
And that was a reader story. We're going to start these podcasts going forward with reader stories because there are so many of them. And I choose stories that I think are representative of what's common in marriages and long-term relationships and what I see from readers over and over again. This is our first official episode, and we are going to be talking today about men's anger at their partners. I think this story encapsulates how intense that anger can really be. You know, we talk a lot about men's anger and violence and all of that, but socially we don't talk so much about how that anger is directed at men's partners and how they bear the brunt of it. Research generally shows that men and women are equally angry. Women have lots of things to be angry about in a patriarchal society, and they feel that anger. But there have been a ton of studies about how they manage the anger, and basically they show that women adopt a lot of strategies to manage their anger, especially with their partners and with their children, because they understand the destructive effects of that anger. Men do not. Men adopt no strategies to manage their anger. So what ends up happening is they go out into the world, they feel angry, bad things happen. They know that they'll get arrested or lose their job if they become inappropriately angry. So instead, they take that inappropriate anger home, and women are left to deal with it.
Yeah, so I think that part of what's going on is women have a lot more to be angry about than men. There's no doubt about that, especially now. But it's true at any time in history, I think. And it's kind of the same dynamic that I think that plays out in with racism, which is the ones who have to deal with it develop strategies because that's the world they live in. And the ones who don't cry the loudest the first time something goes wrong. So white people, generally insecure, generally will go to racism very quickly. And I think that same dynamic plays out with women and men. Women have to swallow their anger repeatedly throughout the day, throughout multiple interactions, because if they don't, you know, they know how they'll be labeled, for one, but they also just won't be able to get through the day.
Yeah. So like what happens if you're an angry woman? You're crazy, you're irrational, you're hysterical, and that's a reason not to listen to you, right?
But
if you're an angry guy, you're righteous, you're indignant. Someone must have done something to make you angry. So you deserve to feel angry, and women's anger is a sign that they just should not be listened to.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that's those stereotypes play out in an office environment, definitely. The angry woman boss as opposed to the angry male boss. But, you know, I think that one thing that we lose with men, I mean, men are angry. I'm angry. I'm angry all the time. we all are. Like, society is kind of fucked, in case you hadn't noticed. And there's a lot going wrong. There's a lot that's unfair. But fundamentally, I think what's going on with men is that anger hides other emotions. If you're worried, you get angry. If you're sad, you get angry. If you're insecure, you know what makes you feel better? Feeling angry. It's something that can make all these negative emotions, if not disappear, because they're still there, but at least cover for them. And I think that, like I said, that plays out with racism and xenophobia. It's easy to hate and blame other people because it makes you feel good and it says, it's not my fault I can't get a job. It's because of whatever. You get to put your problems on someone else, and then you don't have to deal with them. But the problem, I think, isn't so much that men are feeling this as it is that how it's manifesting, right?
Yeah. So I think, like Jeff said, a lot of this anger comes from entitlement. You know, men are raised from birth that they are entitled to certain things that they're probably not going to get. And I have another reader story that I think really exemplifies this. She says, I have told my husband many, many, many times how uncomfortable it makes me when he watches me dress, undress, or shower. He knows. Yesterday morning, I was getting dressed and husband walked into the room and just stood there watching me. I didn't make eye contact. He asked me what was wrong. I said nothing. I asked him why he was just standing there. He said, staring at me. It's like watching a beautiful sunset. Not impressed, I raised an eyebrow and left the room quickly, hearing him sigh loudly as I walked out. I knew my decision to respond with a raised eyebrow and a hasty exit would not be received well. I waited the rest of the day for the fallout. Because my parents were visiting, he remained neutral. But I knew it was brewing. After my parents left, and after we put the kids to bed and watched a bit of TV, was the dreaded time for us to go to bed. I brushed my teeth, lingering for a long time in the bathroom. When I got to bed, he was still up in bed, which is my first clue he'll be trying for sex. I engaged him in cheerful conversation, because I know from past experience that if I just get into bed without talking to him, he gets mad. Then he asked for a hug. I said, okay. Then he started all the gentle caressing. I let this go on for 10 to 15 minutes. Sometimes I try to dissociate in order to let it happen and get it over with. But I couldn't this time. So I said, sorry, I just can't get into it tonight. He pulled away, sighed loudly, and I waited. Then it came, the verbal onslaught. How I make him feel unloved, undesired. How I make him feel worthless, like he's nothing. How heartless I am, how cold, how mean, how selfish. I did my best to gray rock him, but it just kept coming. For about 30 to 45 minutes, he just tore into my character and how I've mistreated him. I reminded him we had just had sex 2 days prior, and I just didn't want it tonight. He says it wasn't about sex at all, but about love and affection. But it was about sex. It always is. He said he resented how my mistreatment of him was causing him to be the, quote, pussy and the, quote, whiny little girl bitch in our relationship. I told him he didn't need to use offensive language with me. He reminded me that he'd made dinner for us, and yet I don't show any gratitude. I stayed calm throughout. I mostly stayed quiet and let him spew, but I said a few things here and there, acknowledging that I understood he was feeling hurt. He was pissed that I was acknowledging but not giving him what he wanted. Finally, he went quiet and I drifted off to sleep, but was then jolted awake by him saying, "Are you really just going to go to sleep?" And then followed by another 5 minutes of verbal attack. Then he fell asleep. I stayed up for another hour, lying there, adrenaline flowing. I dared not get up because he would wake up and ask me where I was going and the verbal attack would start all over again. This morning, he got up first. I found him downstairs. I said good morning, but he ignored me. Silent treatment. I gave him a hug and a kiss, and this seemed to disarm him enough for the time being. He thanked me for the greeting, and the silent treatment ended, and he went back to normal. But make no mistake, I have now been primed for the expectation of sex tonight. If I don't give him sex tonight, I will face another onslaught, and this one will be worse. If I value my sleep and not being attacked in my bed, what should be a safe, comforting place, I will know enough to just give him sex. So I think the thing that is most striking about this is from the very first interaction, the entitlement he displays to have her react in a very specific way. This all starts because she didn't make eye contact with him when he was watching her undress. He has trained her and he expects her to behave in a way that caters to his desires without even considering her own. And it just spirals from there.
Yeah. Could we step back for a moment? And because, you know, I never knew until you started doing all of this what other relationships were like, how normal this kind of behavior was. I didn't understand it. And so could you say a little bit more just about anger in relationships?
Yeah, I mean, from the women I talk to and, you know, over the years, it's been at this point tens of thousands of them. It's also been, you know, tens of thousands of women that I have surveyed anonymously. And then tons and tons and tons of peer-reviewed literature on relationships and marriage and men's anger. this is absolutely normal. A man decides he wants something from his partner, and even if he doesn't communicate to her, he expects her to deliver it without any concern for her needs at all. We see this behavior in women who have just given birth, women who have just had surgery, women who are dying of cancer. No matter what is going on with her, these men feel entitled to treat her as an object who give them what they want, whether it's a meal, whether it's entertainment, whether it's the specific kind of therapy that they want, whether it's sex, always on his terms. It only counts as sex if he orgasms. Her orgasm has nothing to do with it. These women are tools for their partner. And I think that that is where men's anger is birthed, is their belief that women are tools.
Well, there was one line, too, in that he said that really just summarized the whole thing, which is, you're turning me into a whiny little bee.
Yeah.
What?
Maybe he just is.
Yeah, well, there's no maybe about it. Other people don't do that to you. You do that to yourself. And, you know, if she doesn't want to have sex with him, maybe there's a reason for it. Maybe, I mean, this foreplay, this is not how you do this. It's not how you do it.
Women are like, you "Oh, you insulted me. I'm so turned on now."
Well, I just mean like, "Oh, I don't. It's not up anymore." But the rubbing, the rubbing. Yeah, that's not going to cut it. But again, like, you see it where this guy is angry. This guy's feeling insecure, right? Like, all right, be a pop psychologist for a second. Pretend to be one. So he's feeling insecure here, right? Because he's been rejected,
right?
And how does that insecurity manifest? Anger. And how does he deal with the fact that he knows that he's like, he's being whiny and he's being weak? He blames someone else for it. I mean, this is like the epitome of weakness, is it not?
Yeah, I mean, this is what men are taught, is that women are responsible for women's behavior and women are responsible for men's behavior. And I think it's really interesting that he points out to her that he cooked her a meal. We have to assume that, like in most heterosexual relationships, she's cooking all the other meals. But he thinks that cooking her a meal has earned him sex. And, you know, we've started to hear in the culture that foreplay begins outside of the bedroom. And what a lot of men have interpreted this to mean is not that if you create a safe and happy home, if you treat her like a human being who matters, if you make her feel loved and important, she is more likely to want to have sex with you. Oh, no. They think you can buy sex with one act of kindness, even if you're otherwise abusive. It's completely bizarre that anyone would believe that.
Yeah. And sometimes people just don't want to have sex on a given night.
Yeah.
I mean, that just happens. Yeah. That's just part of being in a relationship. But no, I mean, I think that, you know, what does this guy think that is going to come from this? Like, more sex? Does he think this is going to get more sex? Because if it does, because she's already going that direction, right?
Yeah, it is going to get him maybe not more sex, but the level of sex he expects, because he has created an environment where sex is something done for him and sex is something done to protect her from him.
Yeah, and so what is that going to teach him?
To do more of it. But it's not her fault that she's doing that. This is a cycle. It's that he abuses her, she can't leave, and so he learns to abuse her more.
Right.
And, you know, this is the reality, is that, you know, we read all these think pieces that are like, why are men so mean to women? And why is there sexism? It's because it is to men's advantage. They get rewarded for acting like this, because once you have kids and you're trapped with him, you know, you got to do what you have to do to keep your kids safe. And she actually went on later on to say that, you know, the next target would be the children, that if she didn't have sex with him, then he would start being abusive toward the children. And that's usually when she gives in, is to protect her children.
Yikes. I mean, you know, how is that a reward for this guy? What kind of piece of, like, okay. I mean, at this point, we're going way off of the limited information we have, but let's just keep going with it. What kind of reward is that? Like, what kind of life is that? Is that what you want? Is for your wife to have sex with you because she's afraid you're going to be mean to children if you don't?
Yeah.
Like, is that what you want people to think about you? Is that what you want your partner to think about you? Like, that is just, that's just pathetic. And I wish that men would start to have a little bit more strength in seeing this kind of weak bullshit for exactly what it is. It's because ultimately that's what all of this is, like all this anger. It's just like weakness. It's just like covering for weakness. It's just covering for insecurity.
Well, it's foisting your weakness onto someone else. Exactly. It's saying my problems come from you.
Because
and
you
so
can't,
you have to be punished.
Because you can't handle your own problems.
So, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I published a piece about why men are so angry at their partners. And one of the things I love about my job is I kind of send things out into the world, and then I get to have a conversation with my readers, and people share whether they think I'm right, examples of how this has manifested in their own life. And basically, my argument was that men see their partners as objects, and they see them as dysfunctional objects when those objects don't give them what they want, and that's why they're so angry. And I was just inundated with really more stories than I thought I would possibly get that were exactly on that point of men just absolutely not seeing their partners as humans. So I want to talk a little bit about that and how I think that that is kind of the ultimate cause of men's anger. So we live in a misogynistic society, and we enculturate both men and women into their roles in the society. And women are taught to be very concerned with men and their needs. Women are taught to overvalue men and what men want, and to undervalue themselves and what they want. And we do this to them from birth. And we see this when women get married, and we suggest to them that they need to communicate more. They need to go to therapy. They need to understand his emotions. They need to make him a list. All of this stuff that they need to do to cater to men when men are mistreating them. And if they don't do it, then it's their fault that they get mistreated. Meanwhile, men aren't really taught much at all about how to treat women, except they're taught that when they grow up, they get a woman of their own. And she's going to cook for him. She's going to clean for him. She's going to have sex with him. She's going to take care of his kids. She's going to do all of these services for him. For men, the enculturation is all about the services that women provide and very little about women as humans. You know, there's also a lot of indoctrination about how women are like different types of humans, and they're irrational and they're crazy. And, you know, what do women want? It can't be known, because it's not like women can talk. So these two sorts of people enter a relationship with completely different expectations, and it's no wonder that it's terrible. What's going on with the men is that the guy, as in these vignettes, thinks the woman owes him something, because that's what he's been taught from birth. And so if she doesn't give that to him, it's not because he didn't do something, because he has never been taught that there are specific things he's supposed to do. It's because there's something wrong with him, her. She's an appliance. She's defective. He got a defective one. It's her hormones. It's that she's mentally ill. It's that she's lazy. It's that she's all these other things that men say to women. It could never possibly be about him, because she's not really a person.
I'm not really sure about what these men are thinking and how direct they are in their thought of, like, she owes this to me because, you know, she's a woman and I'm a man and I've been taught I deserve this. It certainly manifests that way. And if it manifests that way, it doesn't really matter how it gets there. But I think another thing that's going on with these men, and I think that, you know, one question to be put to, like, this guy, that I'm going to be mean to the kids if you don't have sex with me. It's like, do you really want to be married? Like, do you really want this family? Would you be better off without them? Think of all the video games you could play. Think of all the free time you could have. There's societal pressure going in both directions to get married and have a family. No, there's no doubt about that. And there's these men, if you're not happy, like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And I think that the only thing that keeps the men in these marriages is just jealousy and possessiveness.
Well, I think it's more than that, because I think on some level, men do recognize that their woman appliances are providing them with valuable services. And they're never going to say this out loud. And they're probably never going to consciously realize it. But like, let's think about this fucking loser. You know, he's obviously not happy. But if he gets divorced, he's going to have even less sex. Because who wants to fuck this guy? I mean, come on. He's going to have someone who's not providing him with household services. He's going to have less time with his kids. And the time that he does have with his kids, he's going to actually have to work and parent, which he probably doesn't want to do because it seems like most men like this don't want to do it. So, you know, he wants to stay married. There is a reason that women initiate 80% of divorces. It's that marriage is to the benefit of men. And I think that this guy never consciously thinks, I'm going to abuse my kids to get sex. I don't think these guys are consciously thinking much of anything. Like, they're just reacting. Right. I think what's really going on is that, you know, like I said in the beginning, with women adopting strategies to manage their anger and men not, women are taught from birth that they have to control themselves and their emotions and that their behavior affects other people and that the way they act will affect how other people treat them. Men aren't taught any of this. Men don't learn. It's a total myth that men suppress their emotions. It's just that men think anger isn't an emotion. And so men just act how they feel. So this guy feels unhappy. He probably doesn't even know why. Maybe he doesn't like his job. Maybe he doesn't like the way he looks. Maybe he has financial stress. Maybe he's worried about his kids. Maybe his family is abusive. And he's just acting the way that makes him feel, which is mad, and being mean to whoever is in front of him. And that's his wife and kids. So if his wife doesn't have sex with him, it's not that he's like, oh, well, now I'm going to take the kids hostage. It's just that he gets more and more upset and starts to take it out on the kids. And that's what this really is it's a lack of self-awareness and it's a lack of emotional control. I reject this idea that men are these brilliant, calculating monsters. They're just losers reacting to things and not caring about the way they affect others because patriarchy has told them they do not have to.
Yeah, I think it's pretty rare to encounter someone who's like, I'm going to act this way. And that's going to make the other person feel this way. And then that's going to affect this ultimate, you know, behavior that I want. I just don't think most people go through life like that.
That requires an incredible amount of self-control and emotional intelligence, which is not something men are really raised to have.
Yeah, it does. And I think that, you know, ultimately, like we said, there's lots of reasons to be angry in the world. But like your anger doesn't have to manifest in like being mean to your family. You know, it can also manifest as motivation. It can manifest as doing good work. It can, you know, you can make that anger productive, even if you don't want to acknowledge the emotions that underlie it. You know, you can fight the right people. You can fight for the right things. So men don't need to hide from it. They don't need to, because obviously, you know, a guy like that who's already crying about being a whiny little bee, he's not going to have, if you tell him not to be angry, he's going to think that makes him even more of a whiny little bee, right? But he doesn't have to hide from it. He just has to channel this to something productive. And there's like a simple rule for guys who are married and guys with families about their anger. It's like, you don't direct it at your family. That's it.
Don't
like,
you want
what
your
happens? What happens? You start to like your family more.
Don't you want your family to be like a harbor from the storm of the world?
Like, yeah, and from your own, you know, from your own anger. Like you know, Son loves it when I'm an asshole to people.
It's true.
She thinks it's really amusing.
Well, to be fair, he's an asshole to people who deserve it because he's a civil rights attorney. So, you know, he's an asshole to like people defending cops who have murdered people and to, you know, prosecutors who think you should spend the rest of your life in jail for smoking weed.
But also whatever the case, the point is, it's simple. You just don't direct it to your family. Your family is someone, your family should be beyond reproach. Your wife should be. That doesn't mean you don't ever disagree. It doesn't mean you don't say, I don't think you should do this thing. It doesn't mean any of that, but it means like, you don't lose your temper. You don't yell. You don't scream. If you find yourself doing that, it's a lack of self-control. And if it's a lack of self-control, that's your own failure. You can communicate everything you are trying to communicate without being angry, without losing your temper, without calling names. Like, think of what you're actually trying to communicate.
Like what is your goal?
What is my message? What message do I want this person to leave this conversation with? And then think, how do I say that in a way that will actually get through to them? And if your goal is to make this person feel like shit, then you just need to leave.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, yeah, like, men are human beings and men have reasons to be angry. But there's never a reason to berate your partner, especially for not having sex with you after she just had sex with you 2 days ago. Just for the, like, two men who listen to this, the data on sexual frequency in marriage is, you know, maybe once a month on average. Although sexual frequency is much higher in feminist marriages, not because men trade feminism for sex, but because they've created a safe environment where the woman is honored as a person who matters. And, you know, women tend to want to have sex with people like that. So, and then, like, I think the final reason that men's anger is so prolific, I guess, is men don't face consequences for anger directed at their partners. You know, we still don't take domestic violence seriously. We treat it as if it's, you know, a loss of control or a sign of passion, even though the rates of men murdering their partners are climbing. You know, the things that men do to the women in their lives, if they did to anyone else, they would serve years in prison. You know, the guy who shoved the woman up against the wall because of a pot. I mean, imagine if he did that to a cop. Imagine if he did that at a restaurant. You know, we just don't take anger directed and violence directed at women seriously because we don't really think women are people and because we're socialized to think, well, maybe they kind of deserve it. And, you know, we end up seeing this in the court system. You know, every divorcing woman gets the advice, don't bring up the abuse unless it's severe enough to cause injuries. It doesn't matter if he rapes you. It doesn't matter if he calls you a bitch. It doesn't matter if he systematically degrades you for years and years and years. Judges don't care. And, you know, even if he's beaten you in front of the kids, they're probably still going to say, well, maybe he could be a good dad.
Premise of men getting away with displays of anger is, you know, obviously true. I mean, you could just watch any professional sport, any men's professional sport, and you'll see guys going, doing things, getting away with things in a game that if they had done outside of the game, they would be arrested. And it's just tolerated because it's like, oh, it's competitive. It's like, well, yeah, it can be really competitive without throwing a punch or taking a cheap shot. And so I don't really understand why. I mean, there's lots of reasons why it's kind of come to this point in society. But fundamentally, like, I think if you're behaving in your home in a way that you would not be able to behave in the workplace, then that means that you don't have the respect for your family to actually treat them in a civilized way. You know, your house should not be the place you go to take out all of your anger on the world.
The other thing I want to say about this is that if a switch flips when people he respects come over to visit, or when he has a work function, or when you're with family, and he's able to treat you with respect then and not scream at you, it means he knows what he's doing. It's not that he's lost control. It's that he is choosing not to control himself. You know, this is a choice. Behaving this way towards someone you are supposed to love is a choice. So speaking of choices, one of the most consistent pieces of feedback I got from readers for our pilot episode, I was really surprised by, is they said that just hearing you interact with me in a way that was not degrading and disrespectful was completely unfamiliar to them in a marriage. And like hearing how we manage things and hearing like you not get defensive when I talked about feminism was helpful to them to see, and also something they had like never seen a man do, which I think is really sad. So I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, what conflict looks like in a healthy marriage, because conflict is not abuse. Strident conflict is not abuse. You know, we have all kinds of conflicts and we both get mad at each other sometimes, but I don't feel afraid of you or degraded by you or anything like that. So what makes the difference?
Defensiveness is always just like a sign of weakness. It just always is. And so I think women can, white women maybe have a good course of a good way to understand this. Why don't you go? And I know many do get hyper defensive when racism comes up.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden you're the men.
Yep.
And black people are the women.
Yep.
And you react the exact same way. Not all of you, some of you. But I think that even thinking about that is how would I react in this situation? And if you find yourself getting defensive, then I think that you have some understanding of why men get so defensive.
Yeah.
And what underlies your defensiveness? Like, why would a white person get defensive about a black person talking about racism they've experienced?
Because people want to feel good about themselves.
And they don't want to feel like they don't want to feel like they're being told that they have it too easy.
Yeah.
They don't want to feel like they have a guilty conscience.
Mm-hmm.
And they just don't want to acknowledge that someone else has a hard or that a lot of what's going on with men.
It's about feeling good rather than actually being good. And this, so one of my favorite Jeff stories, I entered our marriage as a person who has a really hard time apologizing about things. You know, there will be a dispute and, you know, the way that disputes go, not so much with Jeff and me anymore, but just generally is, you know, you both say mean things and then it becomes really hard to apologize for your mean thing because the other person said mean things too. And it feels like you're saying that's okay. So it was hard for me to apologize. And it took a couple years with Jeff for me to learn how to do it, although like I'm still not perfect. But one of the things that Jeff taught me and that I saw him do over and over again is that oftentimes if you fuck up and then you apologize, the person will like you better than if you never fucked up in the first place. Because apologizing requires a deeper respect for another person and a deeper self-awareness. And seeing that apologizing is a sign of respect and strength and self-awareness has been helpful for me. And I think that that's kind of one of the many signs of a functional relationship. You know, also, like, I don't think that there can be functional heterosexual relationships without an awareness of oppressive dynamics, because one of the things that is lingering in the background of every heterosexual relationship is the threat of violence. You know, if we believe official statistics, 1 in 4 marriages is physically abusive. But everyone agrees that those official statistics greatly underestimate the problem. And in a lot of marriages, women are engaged in an all-day, everyday process of trying to prevent violence. And if they weren't, we don't know what it would look like. So I think that men need to start by understanding that, like, your wives are scared of you. When you get angry, she's scared. You know, she's afraid of what will happen if she says what she really thinks. And Jeff wasn't so aware of that dynamic, like in the early months of us being together, but quickly learned about it and came to understand that, you know, a conversation to him that just feels like a tense conversation can be a conversation that's really scary to me. And so he's had to work to kind of like moderate his tone and be mindful of those dynamics because, you know, when you get a whole bunch of male privilege, then you got to do some stuff to correct for it a little bit.
Yeah, just to first revisit something you said, it's a good tip for men, and it's a good tip generally, but you can often make a friend by screwing something up and apologizing and fixing it. It's amazing how well it works, especially for guys, and especially if it's a woman, because she's not used to guys being like that. And you know what it shows? If you say, oh, I'm sorry, like, that's my fuck up, let me fix it. You know what that shows? It shows strength. It does. It doesn't show weakness. It doesn't show that you're rolling over. It shows that you're not afraid of accountability and that you're confident enough to admit when you're wrong. And like, that's just something I think men need to keep in mind, right?
So like, I can get mad at Jeff and I can be like, I'm really fucking pissed at you. And like, here's why. And that's fine. Like, there's nothing wrong with saying you're mad. I think that what makes it different for us is that we are actually trying to resolve the problem. And we'll both make lots of, like, bids for repair during the conflict. Of like, okay, but, like, what do we need to make this better? Like, what do you need from me to make this better? And you fall off of it for a while, and then someone redirects it. But there's never, I mean, let's talk about things that there never are. There's never name-calling. There's never, like, insulting someone as a bad person. You know, there's never threatening the other person, you know, making them feel scared. There have been times that you've been mad at me that I've said, like, I'm scared. And then, right. like, you immediately, like, change. You don't stop being mad at me. You know, it's not like a get out of the fight free card, but it is a, like, okay, you need to
right.
chill out.
No, it's true, because, like, I can definitely broadcast a lot more anger than I'm feeling, you know, because I'm pretty well schooled in the art of being an angry man. I get it. I get how that is. I get how an intense look, you know, can mean a lot to a person. It can be intimidating to a person in a certain context. And, you know, whether I mean it that way or not, it's like, well, if I mean it that way, that's kind of weird. And if I don't, then maybe I should try not to do that. But, like, it's not like our fights are always perfect or anything. I think the key, though, is, you know, first, like, you don't, everyone feels a certain way in the middle of a fight about the scope of it. But, and it feels bigger than it is, right? It feels like it'll never go away. But the truth is, like, you've had way worse fights than this, and they've all gone away. And also, you're married. Like, that's the deal. The deal is you're married, and you're going to get past it. And if your fights aren't approached that way, if there's this, like, background of, like, is this the end? Are you going to divorce me over this? I mean, you'll ask yourself like that. Be like, don't, that's ridiculous.
Or, like, is he going to hurt me? Or is he going right. to hurt my kids over this?
Right.
Like, that's not a real marriage. What? That's not worth it.
No. So, you know, I think that, again, it goes back to men being able to control themselves, really. That's a core thing.
Yeah. And, like, I got a question from a reader. It hasn't been published yet, but it'll be published by the time this podcast comes out, of are all problems in marriages men's fault? And what she was asking is, you know, since misogyny is such a problem in marriage, if you eliminate misogyny, do you still have problematic marriages? And yeah, you do. There's all kinds of other things that can go wrong. I have all kinds of, like, problematic behaviors in our marriage, and Jeff has some that, like, aren't misogyny related. Communication is hard. Living with someone is hard.
Mental addiction, you yeah. know, irresponsible behavior, mm-hmm. You know.
Not having the skills to just talk.
Right.
A lot of it is, like, a lack of skills, I think. But eliminating misogyny is the first step. Like, you can't deal with anything else until the misogyny is under control. Because if I'm with someone who makes me feel afraid, then how am I to talk to them honestly about their behavior or about my behavior? I can't. I wanted to talk a little bit about how women in marriages with angry men can cope. You know, the truth is, we tell women a lot about what they can and should do to cope, and how they should, you know, like, gentle parent their husbands into being better husbands. And you can't, because they're choosing to behave in this way. So I think instead what women in marriages with these men need to think about is how to be strategic about dealing with them. You know, when can you safely ignore them? And when should you pretend that you care about what they're saying when you actually don't? What can you do to emotionally disconnect from their anger? What can you do to emotionally disconnect from the way they make you feel? You know, if this marriage is not working for you and you need to leave, but you can't yet, your first step really needs to be, this is a bad person. This is a shitty person. Why should I care what he says about me? You know, if he wants to berate you, go somewhere else in your head. To whatever extent you can, don't let him embroil you in a long conflict. Reclaim as much of your time and mental space as you can. Stop trying to defend yourself or prove yourself to him. He's never going to see your perspective. That's really the best advice. You can't make him behave differently because he's choosing to behave that way.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I hesitate just because I didn't even know the scope of the problem until recently, until you kind of like, you know, exposed it through all the work you've been doing. And so I'm not sure the best way to navigate one of those situations. I do think that.
Let me just say something about that. Like, yeah. I really appreciate that because there's a whole world of men giving women advice on how to deal with things that men have never dealt with.
Right.
You know, men come on my page all the time and they're like, you need to pick better men, or, well, you just need to do this. And it's like, bro, you have never dealt with this in your life. Like, you don't know.
Going back to the is it all men's fault kind of conversation, the few things, like the stories that readers send to you, or kind of ongoing dramas that some women have kind of given updates on, there's always this like placation going on. And I understand that's kind of like a survival thing, but it's also not always, because like that, like you've said, that's how women are kind of taught to interact with men. And I think that men need more directness. They need to know where they stand and what's acceptable and what's not. And the truth is, like, we've had lots of conversations over the course of our relationship over what's acceptable and what's not, like, yeah, in the relationship. And even I saw some of the comments on the last show of, I have an equal marriage because I've made it clear that that's the only way that this is acceptable.
Yeah.
And I think that has to be what goes on from day one of a relationship.
You can't hope to like fall into it, because in a society where all the pressure is the other way, you're not going to. That, you know, that's the bit about marriage being work. That applies mostly to women who I think are with like passive, lazy men rather than like actively abusive men. I mean, if he's already become abusive, that's a choice. But if it's just kind of like, it's not good, you're kind of doing everything, you have to set the standards. And when you enter a new relationship or enter your next relationship, you have to be very clear. If you can't say to someone, I will divorce you if you make me do the majority of the work in this relationship, that's not a safe person.
Right. And I think the other thing is, there's a lot. I mean, depression is real. It doesn't excuse behavior, but it's real. ADD is real. Like, it could be like, if your guy gets on a stimulant,
yeah,
you'll actually have a different sort of partner.
Yeah.
I mean, or you could have a maniac. You know, it goes many ways.
Yeah.
But like, making sure that you are taking care of each other.
Men can have real problems. And I think the real question is like, well, it's ADD does not mean, and therefore you have to put up with this forever.
Right.
It's ADD, and he and you to a lesser extent need to work together to come up with a solution to live with this. And if he's not willing to, then you don't have to live one more day with this, because,
right,
you know, the reason matters insofar as if he is working on the reason and you are working on the reason and it's tolerable, that's one thing. But if he's just like, well, I'm depressed, so like, I'm just going to go sit in my hole for the rest of the marriage. No.
Yeah, I agree. But it's impossible to live up to someone's expectations if they don't set out those expectations.
Yeah, that's.
And those expectations should be set out early. If they're not set out early, it's going to be harder to change them. But if they're not communicated, how do you know?
Yeah.
And so direct communication. Now, that doesn't mean I've heard this before. I'm not an asshole. I'm just direct, or I'm just being direct.
Yeah.
We've all heard that one before. Directness doesn't mean you get to say it however you want. And this goes for everybody, obviously, but
directness means clear, specific, actionable communication.
Calm.
Yeah.
Communication.
Here's what dividing things equally looks like. Here's how I imagine us parenting kids. Here's how I would like our sex life to go.
But people struggle with some of the most basic things, like two people start fighting over, someone will say, look up at the sky and say, oh, the sky is really blue today. And the other one will disagree. And it turns out that they don't have the same definition of blue.
Yeah.
And that if they actually talked through what that definition was, they would find out that they did agree.
Yeah.
And that happens so much in relationships where you have a fight and it turns out that you haven't defined your terms. And you're arguing passionately and around, this point. We used to have arguments all the time.
Yeah.
We're like halfway through, you're like, we don't actually disagree, but now I'm so mad that I want to find something to disagree about.
Or like the are you mad fight. The you seem mad, you seem mad, you seem mad. Well, now I'm mad. When really like what that fight is about is like anxiety and reassurance.
Right.
Like, right. Do you still love and like me? Can you still, care about me?
Yeah, no, I have a joke sometimes. Like, San's kind of like picks up a beer bottle and just like smacks it on the counter, sticks it in my face. Like, are you angry? Like, whoa. No.
No. No, I am not.
Anyway, now there's definitely like a need to set standards and set expectations and have that go both ways and have a reasoned conversation about it. Cause ultimately the partnership needs to be a partnership. How would you deal with something if you had a business partnership? Would you fight about your emotions, or would you say you're doing this and this that's harming this business? I don't think this is acceptable. And then your business partner would say, well, I'm doing this because I'm trying to do that. And that like, that's how it has to be. You have to approach it.
We see this a lot with fights about money. And one of the like most common dynamics that I see with readers is the guy's the primary earner and the woman is primarily responsible for buying all the stuff that the family needs. And the guy gets mad at her for overspending, but he doesn't know what the family needs. He doesn't know how much things cost. And he starts putting arbitrary limits that are like very draconian on her rather than actually listening to her as the expert on what the family needs and engaging in like a feedback process of like, okay, well, the kid needs this lesson. We have this much space in our budget. Like, let's work through it. So that's like, that's a real world example of how you can work through conflict.
You can't have that conversation if your partner thinks that it's his money and it's not.
You can't have that conversation if your partner views you as flighty and crazy and incapable of making decisions, because that's what it's really about when he starts trying to say, well, you can have $20 a week for groceries and that's it. The conversation always needs to be about the actual logistics and not what everyone thinks the logistics mean. So, and then, it always comes back to young women and how young women need to look at what things are like for mothers and grandmothers and to see that that is one day going to be them if they make the same choices that their mothers and grandmothers made. Anti-mother sexism exists for a reason. When some guy says to me, you sure sound angry, you sure sound bitter, that's not really for me. That's for the audience. That's designed to make me look crazy and undesirable and not like someone you want to imitate. And when young women see a steady stream of those messages, they reject information from feminist women because they don't want to be angry and bitter like them. And they just go along with whatever the society is telling them to do. And they put up with shitty male behavior. And then 5, 10, 20 years later, the cycle has replicated and they are in a worse marriage than their mother was in with a worse man. And their child is seeing that marriage and having that be normalized. And so this really has to begin with us reaching across the generations and really listening to each other and mothers not demeaning young women as crazy and flighty and, you know, the way that older generations always love to talk about younger generations. And younger generations actually seeing mothers as humans who are just like them and who can maybe provide them with a little bit of information about what to look for and what to avoid. And we've, you know, this begins and kind of ends with pushing back against sexism directed at mothers, of mothers as, you know, irrelevant and lame and embarrassing and uncool and, you know, unattractive and all of those things that we do to separate mothers from the rest of women and make other women not want to be like mothers.
Let me say a few things in case there are men listening. I'm sure that they think I'm a big, I can't even use the words to describe it because
anyway, we all know what they are.
No, hey, you want to fight? Okay, we can fight. You want to play chess? I'll probably lose. No, I'm kidding. Anyway, no, so these are things that I've kind of like learned over the years. And, you know, to whatever extent, I think that they're helpful. And I think the core thing you need to do is just stop giving a fuck about so many things. Like stop, like so much of life does not matter. So many things that your partner does that bother you doesn't matter. You know, these things, I can't think of an example. But
we have frogs being delivered to our house right now.
Yeah.
And Jeff knows not to say anything.
I don't care. I don't like pets. I don't really, like if I had my druthers, I would not have a bunch of frogs and all of the other animals. But like, it doesn't really affect me. And so why would I care? Why would I spend any time thinking about that? You know, losing your temper is a sign of emotional weakness. Stop pretending like you're always the rational one. Think about times where you have been catastrophically and condescendingly just fucking wrong about something. Just, you know the list of stupid things that you've done that's like a funny story? Like, those are actually stories for you being a fucking idiot. You just let yourself off the hook because it's you. If someone else was doing that stuff, they'd list all of those things. Look what a fucking idiot this guy is. And so, you know, if you're going to let yourself off the hook, you got to let everyone else off the hook too.
Yeah, like, is the guy crying and begging for sex acting rational? Is he acting from a place of strength? No.
And I'm just thinking of things like, I don't know, like some project around the house. Oh, I'm going to do it this way. And then, you know, when's, did your last plumbing project?
3 years later.
Like, you know, double in time, 4 or 5 trips to Home Depot. You know, if you were looking at yourself from the outside in and your wife was doing that, you'd say, she doesn't know what the fuck she's doing. She can't do plumbing. Look at this. She's incompetent. But if you're doing it, there's always a reason why it went wrong or something you didn't expect. And so, like, this narrative where you let yourself off the hook, even when you're a condescending asshole, that doesn't really serve anyone.
And letting yourself off the hook is a sign of weakness. Like, if you can't be judged according to a fair standard, that's not really something to be proud of.
No, I don't necessarily agree that it's always a sign of weakness. Sometimes it's just like what you need to do.
Well, yeah, it's just living. But you got to do it to everyone else too.
Right, exactly. Think about all the failures you've justified, all the things that you've done wrong. I mean, like, if you actually start to look at yourself through the lens that you look at other people, you'll realize, oh shit, maybe I am not right all the time. Maybe I'm not always the rational one. You know, and like so many times in my life, I've been like, you know, my girlfriend or whatever is holding me back. If I was spending all this time with her, I would be able to train a lot more and then I'd be winning more tournaments. This is back, you know,
Jeff used to be obsessed with jiu-jitsu.
Yeah. I'd be able to compete more often. I'd be able to train, you know, 6 days a week instead of 4 days a week. And I'd be able to train for 3 hours instead of 2 hours. And I'd be so much better. And then we broke up. And guess what? I did jiu-jitsu even less. I really hated myself for that because of all the resentment that I had built up about it. And it turned out that it was just me who lacked the discipline to do it. That happens all the time. Like, You project your own weaknesses onto someone else, or you look for an excuse. I can't do this because of this other person. And the kind of Fight Club thing out there of you know, we've all been taught, I forget what the speech is, you know, we're going to be astronauts and superstars, and we're not, and we're slowly realizing it, and we're really pissed off about it. It's like, why are you getting pissed about that? Like, not everyone can be those things.
But everyone can be someone who's decent to their partner and has a good family.
Has a good family. Everyone can further the human species by raising kids.
Everyone can be a good dad.
Good kids, right? What's the most important thing in your life? Like, what were the most formative things in your life? Your parents. Yeah. Well, that's going to be what matters to your kids. And so
that's your real legacy. Everyone can be the safe parent that your kid's friends come to when there's some crisis. Like, right. That's something you can be no matter what else is going on.
History will forget everybody.
Yeah. None of us are as important as we think we are.
None of us are important, period. I mean, the sun will envelop the earth and it'll all be gone and no one will matter. So you get your time. And so, you know, don't be an asshole to your family. Just keep them out of it.
I actually have a quote from our oldest child that I got reminded of today with Facebook memories. So the quote is, if someone is sad, just leave them alone for a while. Eventually, they will decompose. Very zen.
Hard work and discipline. Like, that's what we were raised with. So, like, go to that, you know, for yourself. I don't know. I don't get the anger.
No matter what's going on in your life, you can build a safe home, and that is the foundation of happiness. It's the foundation of everything that matters. So our next topics are, we're going to talk about childbirth. That's going to be a couple of episodes. We're going to talk about childbirth rights. We're going to talk about the ways that men fuck up their partner's births, postpartum depression, how that is really a product of misogyny. So we've got some fun episodes coming up. If you are not already, you can subscribe to me on Substack. It's zawn.substack.com. I publish at least 4 pieces a week. 2 of them go out to paid subscribers. You're going to have, if you're a paid subscriber, you're going to get a monthly bonus podcast on Substack or Patreon. I'm on Patreon at Liberating Motherhood. And we'd love to hear your stories about men in anger, what you think is going on with men in anger, what you think needs to happen to fix it. Also, if you like, leave reviews, subscribe, all of the things on the various podcast platforms, it does increase visibility and it does help. So please do that if you like the podcast. Or I guess if you don't, you could also, you know, still like and subscribe and hate listen. And that's it. We'll talk to you guys on the next podcast.